Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. Well, it's sad to say, summer is fleeting. We're August already, end of August. Kids are going back to school. I thought I'd share with you a little essay written by the very talented Mary Schmeek from the Chicago Tribune entitled, Before Summer's Just a Memory, Time Flits Away for Those Swims Not Yet Taken. Mary writes, late summer, even before you raise the shades in the morning, you can sense the shifting of the light. It's light as omen. Light that shifts as insistently as the ticking of a clock. Light that equals time. Time on the move. The great Southern writer William Faulkner, whose novels include Light in August, once talked about it this way. In August in Mississippi, there's a few days somewhere about the middle of the month when suddenly there's a foretaste of fall. It's cool. There's a lambence, a luminous quality to the light, as though it came not from just today, but from back in the old classic times. From Greece. From Olympus. It's a perfect description of light in August in Chicago. But 600 miles north of Faulkner territory, when we feel the foretaste of fall, we feel an added pressure. It gets cold here, hard and fast, which is why, at about this time of every year, some of us start wondering, what haven't I done yet that I meant to do before the summer's gone? Late summer is actually the third summer season in Chicago. The first is early summer, a season characterized by frequent rain, intermittent chill, and the complaint, will summer ever start? Next comes midsummer. In that season, we get to grouse that it's too humid and too hot and the AC in the office is too cold. Even so, midsummer is a relaxed time. Long days, evening strolls, gardens, picnics, vacations, lazy outdoor dinners. Even if we're not taking advantage of all of the above, we know someone is, and we enjoy the thought that before the summer's gone, so will we. Then, faster than you can say back-to-school sale, it's late summer. Wait, summer's almost over? In late summer, the young adults, formerly known as kids, head off to college. Sandals go on sale, fall fashions arrive, and our Facebook friends start posting passive-aggressive status updates like these, which floated past in my feed on Tuesday. Fall classes in the Beverly Arts Center. What to do this fall according to four Chicago locals. Get ready for another cold, snowy winter, Farmer Almanac says. In late summer, the strange human impulse to fast-forward through life even as we wail that life goes by too fast is on full display. So here we are, on the summer wane, and the questions get louder. What haven't you done yet? What do you want to do? Make a peach cobbler? Go to the botanic garden? Go to the beach? Read a trashy beach book? Those are a few of the answers I got when I put the question out to some friends. A few more? Ride my bike along the lakefront. Go camping. Go sailing. Go swimming. Go to the farmer's market. Late summer laments, I've noticed, often include the word go, most of them reducible to the simple phrase, go outside. Some people treat late summer as the end of summer. It's not. It's summer waning, but not summer gone. In my view, summer's not over as long as the cicadas sing. It's still summer as long as the bugs bite and your neighbors party outside too long as you can wear sandals without being stared at, as long as you haven't checked to see where your sweaters are. summer is not over as long as you can still do a few things you vowed you would when summer started. Mine is to go swimming. I also want to watch the sunrise over the lake. I'm announcing these intentions publicly because making an intention public increases the chances of getting it done. So, if you're worried that late summer has come and you haven't done something you want to do, name it out loud. Then, make it happen. It's late, but remember, it's not too late. From Mary Schmeek, very talented writer from the Chicago Tribune, before summer is just a memory, time flits away for those swims not yet taken. Always very talented writer and certainly an essayist that we enjoy sharing some of her thoughts with. And also is a poem that I read at the beginning of the summer, and I think maybe appropriate to read right now. And it's a poem written by Mary Oliver. It's entitled The Summer Day. So let's enjoy The Summer Day and Mary's poem. She writes, "Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean, the one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I have been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?" The Summer Day by Mary Oliver. Maybe we should add, tell me, what is it you plan to do with the rest of your summer? Well, right now, let's listen to some great music by the duo Chad and Jeremy, the classic Distant Shores. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
Sweet, soft summer nights, dancing shadows in the starry lights. You came for me to follow, and we kissed on distant shores. Long quiet hours of play, sounds of tomorrow from yesterday. To follow, and we kissed on distant shores. The careful glance of children playing, raindrops fall as if they're sailing. Quiet thoughts of you, caressed by time. The breeze of summer's gone, whispered memories as nights grow long. To fall.
Chad and Jeremy, and we kissed on distant shores. We're back on The Kevin Moore Show. The hilarious interactive dinner theater experience We Got a Bingo is now playing at the new Chicago Theater Works, 1113 West Belmont. In the spirit of Tony and Tina's wedding, We Got a Bingo treats guests to a night of raucous, interactive theatrical fun. This exciting new show, directed by Ross Young, allows guests to mix and mingle with a lively cast of characters while eating, dancing, and playing bingo all night long. We found an incredible pool of talent in Chicago, and we have found an ideal cast to bring this production to life, said We Got a Bingo creator and producer Bill Collins. Born and raised in Chicago, it has been a longtime dream of mine to introduce Chicago audiences to the hilarious, wacky cast of characters that were created from my own experiences growing up in the city and going to a Catholic school with a mix of Irish and Italian families. This show fits so well into the Chicago culture, and we are truly thrilled to be creating this brand new theater space in the Belmont Theater District, where innovative theater is continuously being produced. The fun, interactive premise of We Got a Bingo allows audience members to be immersed in a dynamic, riotous show filled with music, comedy, and, of course, bingo. As guests enter into the German beer hall known as Der Brouhaha, they are greeted by the lively house polka band as well as the rousing, colorful cast of characters that soon become their dinner dates and bingo partners for the evening. Guests soon learn that they are amongst two rival Chicago parishes, one Italian and one Irish, who are set to merge with one another, against their wishes, and are participating in this bingo bonanza in order to raise money for the imminent union. In between, exhilarating games of bingo, all in attendance are treated to an Italian dinner, drinks, dancing, music, mayhem, and more. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning creator and producer who co-founded the Actors Theater of Minnesota and serves as its managing director, producer of over 50 stage productions in the theatrical, commercial, and corporate sectors, consultant to NBC Television, founder of St. Paul, Minnesota's premier nightclub, Camp Bar and Cabaret, proud graduate of Fenwick High School, and the creator of Chicago's hottest new interactive theater experience, We Got a Bingo, now playing at the new Chicago Theater Works, 1113 West Belmont, Mr. Bill Collins. Billy, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for that great intro. Geez, it sounds like I wrote it myself.
Well, you know what, Ignatius...
I wouldn't have been that good to myself.
You know what Ignatius can do for Fenwick, guys. I want you to know that.
I appreciate that.
Now, you're talking to an Italian-Irish person who certainly has experienced the conflict between the two generations, I'll tell you.
Yeah, you lived it. I'll tell you. In Minnesota, I would tell people about in grade school that there'd be half the class would be decorating the school classroom for St. Patrick's Day and the other for St. Joseph's Day. And people would be all dressed in red on the 17th and all of, or green on the 17th and red on the 19th.
So you've been thinking about this for a while, then.
Well, yeah. Collecting it as I lived, I
guess. You know, there was a great guy. In fact, he was a teacher. He taught me when I was in grammar school, John Powers, who wrote Black Patent Leather Shoes, exactly.
Reflect up, yeah.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I guess unless you're in that genre or you grew up that way with the Catholic upbringing, you don't have the appreciation of some of the stuff we went through.
No, you know, but we're lucky to have done it, I think.
And, of course, you're putting on stage here. And this is a new venue, too, Bill.
Yeah, we just built it out, as I'm sure you know with your background. It's not an easy city to get a lot done in very quickly. But we put our nose to the grindstone. We started construction just after the first of the year, and we're ready to open the doors by the end of July.
The show has had great success up in Minnesota.
Yeah, it's a long-running hit there, and we had real good success with it in Cleveland at Playhouse Square. In my mind, it was always sort of out-of-town runs, you know, shakeouts for bringing it here.
Well, now, in Minnesota, do they still have that ethnic kind of grouping as we have in Chicago?
You know, St. Paul does. St. Paul is, it's a lot like Chicago on a much smaller scale. There's a very heavy Italian neighborhood that is, long, steep history, the levee down along the river, and then sort of up on the banks, there's a large Mexican community where, well, you know, all the street signs and everything in Mexican. And more recently now, there's the Hmong community and the Little Somalia. So it's, St. Paul stays is pretty old school. It's sort of, they call it the last city of the East.
Of course, as I said a little earlier, you went to Fenwick, and of course, your travels took you up to the University of St. Thomas. And so you decided to stay there after school.
Well, and not so much that I decided to stay. I just don't like moving very much.
Okay.
It just got to be too much work to do anything else.
And, of course, you started a very, very popular bar and cabaret there, the Camp Bar and Cabaret. That's a lot of success.
Yeah, it's a great spot. It's, sort of become part of the fabric of downtown St. Paul, that's for sure.
Now, I can attest to Cleveland because I had a couple kids that went to John Carroll in Cleveland, and, of course, some family members also went to John Carroll. So there is that Italian neighborhood feel, and there also is an Irish feel. So they must have appreciated it down there also.
Yeah, it worked well. You know, we adjusted for every city and, you know, kind of what neighborhood dimension and what cherished parishes and what restaurants and, you know, dignitaries and notables that you can work in.
You know, in the spirit of such great interactive theater experiences as Tony and Tina's Wedding, and Anthony Tomasco is a very close friend of mine, and he had great success with that. And, of course, Flanagan's Wake has been around forever, and Tommy Gunn's Garage, of course, has been around. Now, this is added to the landscape and certainly come at a good time because this is a little different. Why don't you, in your own words, tell us how this came about and what it is all about?
Well, it's funny you mentioned Tony and Tina's Wedding. I was in a production in Minnesota, in Minneapolis.
Oh, really?
Yeah, one of the big, long-running ones.
Very uh-huh.
Not as successful as Tony did down here, but a very successful one up there. And played Tina's brother and then eventually played Tony. And you'd run into people on the street and recognize you and say, geez, that was so much fun. And how come there aren't more shows like that?
Right.
And so I always thought, gee, you know, I ought to come up with an idea that it is similar in the type of experience you have, but a different storyline to it. And I was thinking about the bingo games we used to play at St. Vincent Ferrer, which is at 7500 West North Avenue, which was primarily where I was as a kid.
Right.
And that was, you know, Elmwood Park was heavily Italian.
Right.
North of North Avenue there, and then River Forest was a lot of Irish. And it just sort of started falling into place, and then I started putting together a group of friends and writers, and, people that had a lot of interactive experience, and next thing you know, we had a show.
Well, how did the German brouhaha type of, brewhouse type of mentality come into play?
I wanted to have an old school band, because I remember as a kid, you know, a lot of those old Chicago supper clubs had house bands that kind of been there forever.
Sure.
You'd see the three or four piece bands, and they'd all look like they were made out of wax.
I've seen them on Saturday Night Live. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you know, and you could see the owner in the background getting nervous. You know, we'd come in with our big Catholic family with all these young guys and cousins, and the owner, can't you pep it up a little, do a little night fever or something for these kids here? We gotta get a whole new generation coming into this place. So I knew I wanted that sort of a band, you know, that played all the old standards, but then would try and hip it up. And so I decided that the polka band would be a great idea. And then I got to thinking about, you know, how many ethnic restaurants there are in Chicago, and sort of the resurgence of craft beers and breweries, and it just sort of grew out of that.
You know, the idea of theater, I think, is to take you away from a time and place and put you somewhere else where you kind of forget what's happening, the problems that we all, you know, live with day in and day out. And going to the theater and going to enjoy an evening such as We Got a Bingo, it does just that. And, you know, you want to go in there and you spend a couple hours just relaxing, laughing, and because we don't do enough of that, Billy, you know that. And for you to present something like this, I think it's good for all of us. It really is.
Yeah, you know, and I honestly, I've always thought there's enough people doing theater that's trying to change the world and that are going to, you know, deliver important messages. pages, and all of that's great, and there's a lot of people doing it, and I was always a big fan of sort of the concept of vaudeville and these old English music halls where people would go and sing, and they'd yell at the actors on stage, and there'd be engagement. And I think, you know, it was such an important release and a great way to just kind of get away from it all, and that's, you know, one of the things theater can do. So that's kind of where my focus has always been, with the part I've liked most.
And I think people should go in there with that. That people should go in there with that mindset too. I mean, you're not going to get the William Faulkner or Tennessee Williams when you come into the theater, but you're going to have a lot of fun. And maybe sometimes that's what you need, is a lot of fun for a night out. You know?
Yeah, it that's truly what it is. And you know, I'm not a big guy with this. Adults don't play enough, and we should have more play in our lives. But there is something to that, that, you know, this gives you permission to just sort of have some fun and cut loose a little.
Now, when you were at Fenwick, were you involved in drama at Fenwick? When did you pique your interest as far as entertainment goes?
No, it wasn't until after I got out of college.
Really?
Yeah. Through happenstance, took a sort of a one-day seminar on getting into television commercials, and pretty quickly secured an agent and had a really lucky, blessed career in TV commercials and radio and corporate spoke stuff, and that sort of led then to meeting a lot of other actors and people who then encouraged me to start doing some stage stuff, and went from there.
Now, you like the producing and the creating and so forth. Do you miss being on the stage acting yourself?
You know what, I do, to a certain extent. I'm maybe a little too ADD. I love getting to opening night, having that first great weekend where you realize, geez, it all works. People are reacting the way you expect them to. And after that, it just gets to be a little drudgery for me. And I'm not disciplined enough to really be one of those guys that can do 12 weeks and deliver the kind of energy and performance you need to do regularly. And so I miss the excitement of it, but not the drudgery of it. And I guess the fact that I call it drudgery is indicative enough of why I don't do so much staging.
Well, it's got to be gratifying, though, to see the people that go and have come to see We Got a Bingo at the New Chicago Theater Works and enjoy the satisfaction they're getting from it as they leave the theater.
Oh, heck yeah. And that is what's the best. You just see so many people leaving and telling stories about a similar experience they had in their life, or a character that they think, God, there was a nun just like that at our school. There was, you know, that big bossy lady, we had one of those at our parish. And it's just really fun to see that, the connections people make. And it's a little nostalgic, and you see, especially when families come in, multi-generations, and the grandparents saying to the grandkids, you know, that's what all the churches used to be like that. Nobody lived in a neighborhood in Chicago. They lived in parishes, and that's how you knew where somebody lived.
Right, exactly. And I don't know if that translates anywhere else than Chicago, though. And I still enjoy, as many times as it happens, sitting down and watching the PBS specials when they have the music of the 60s and the 70s and the folk music and all that stuff. I enjoy, as much as it's on, I enjoy watching it, and I enjoy listening to stories or reading books or reading little short stories about the way it was to grow up in a Catholic family or Catholic school or Catholic parish in years past, because you'll never see that again, because, first of all, there aren't any nuns teaching any of the Catholic schools, so you can't even find them.
No. Yeah, that's one of the biggest things I think is different, is that, unfortunately, the vocations aren't popular as they used to be, and hopefully they're going to find a way to rejuvenate them.
Now, isn't it interesting, though, that our Archbishop is a graduate of St. Thomas?
Yeah, he sure is. And so I'm sure we're going to manage to get him over here, because in the context of the show, the Archbishop actually has a role.
Really?
Yep, we pull it. It's actually played by an audience member every night, and we secretly sneak an audience member away, dress him up as the Archbishop, and bring him in, and he's sort of the deus ex machina. He comes in and demands that the two parishes get along, and delivers resolution, and all ends well.
Well, you know, he seems to be the type of guy who would stop in one of those days.
Well, that's what I keep hearing. So fingers crossed.
Well, what's next up for Bill Callens?
Well, I think I'm going to be here a while.
Good, good.
We've got to get our feet firmly planted in the Chicago market. And, you know, we've had over the years a number of other markets asking about this show, and I didn't want to look at moving it anywhere until it played Chicago. So maybe something like that, I don't know.
Well, you look at the success of the other ones we mentioned, and Defending the Caveman and Menopause, a musical, look how popular those become. There's no reason this couldn't also.
Geez, you know, Tony did with Tony and Tina's Wedding. A million tickets. You'd think that's what every seventh person in the Metro saw.
Yeah. Well, that's exciting. Keep us tuned in so we can get the word out. You got a great publicist in Ann Fink over at Carol Fox. And,
they're a great team.
You got to stop by and see Richie Borsch over at Fenwick. Maybe do a little play over there for him.
Well, I've certainly got to send him tickets. That's for sure.
Absolutely, he'd love it. He'd be very proud of you.
Yeah. Well, geez, Kevin, you're very generous with your time and your comments about the show. I can't thank you enough for that.
Well, it's great to have you on. We Got a Bingo was first presented by the Actors Theater of Minnesota in 2004. Since then, the show has played in various venues throughout the Midwest, including Playhouse Square in Cleveland, and has delighted more than 100,000 theatergoers of every age. The Star Tribune hails the show as a hilarious night of bingo and beer. We Got a Bingo is great fun. The Stillwater Gazette states that We Got a Bingo is a tremendous play, and Lavender Magazine calls it a wild affair. The hilarious interactive dinner theater experience We Got a Bingo is now playing at the new Chicago Theater Works, 1113 West Belmont. In the spirit of Tony and Tina's Wedding, We Got a Bingo treats guests to a night of raucous interactive theatrical fun. This exciting new show, directed by Ross Young, allows guests to mix and mingle with a lively cast of characters while eating, dancing, and playing bingo all night long. And on the line with us right now is the creator and producer of We Got a Bingo, our good pal, Bill Callens. Bill, a phone number if people would like to come out and see the show?
Sure. Well, the easiest way is just go to the website, wegotabingo.com. It's gotta, G-O-T-T-A, bingo.com. Or you can call us at 312-391-0404.
A pleasure talking to a Fenwick Friar, and continued success, and let us know what else we can do.
Hey, I really appreciate it, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak with your audience.
Take care, Billy.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bill Callens, who's got a great concept, We Got a Bingo. It's at the Theater Works, Chicago Theater Works, 1113 West Belmont, for an open-end run, and hopefully it goes on forever, as Tony and Tina's Wedding does. And, again, if you want some information, 312-391-0404. Another little poem by Mary Schmick about the end of summer, or at least about August. Mary writes, August is summer's last call, so enjoy. Late August arrives, a farewell to the sun. The summer fun wanes, and how much have you done? Been swimming, gone fishing? Played hooky enough? Or are you still wasting the days on dumb stuff? Like hours on Facebook, updating your page, or tethered to Twitter, get out of your cage. The cage of bad habits, the cage of routine. Don't waste this late August attached to a screen. Yes, Groupon's in trouble. It gasps and it slumps, and poor old Mark Zuckerberg's down in the dumps. And yes, politicians continue their stunts. Todd Aiken, now there's a legitimate dunce. He says he misspoke, but I think he did not. He said what he thinks, and therein lies the rot. But never mind news in these late August days. The news is forever, while summer's a phase. It cannot be stored like a vintage fine wine. It cannot be left to grow old on the vine. In August, the summer comes down to the wire. It's use it or lose it. But, geez, don't let it expire. Forget for a moment the Peterson trial, forget that the world can be tragic and vile. Enough with the creeps and the crazies and loons, the pals and the poseurs, the jerks and buffoons. No. Look at the bees, how they sniff at the flowers. That nectar won't last for too many more hours. Politicians continue to fight, so let them. It's August. Just look at this light. The shadows have shifted, and so has the breeze, and look at the change in the late August trees. The leaves are still green, they still rustle and lilt, but look closer still, and you'll see a few wilt. And listen, cicadas, ecstatic with song, their buzzing's a warning, our time isn't long. September soon, so get on your bike, go sit on the porch, go out for a hike. The last weeks of August are not made for work. They're made to go sailing, to nap, and to shirk. Go look for some water, a lake or a beach, a pool or a paddle, the juice of a peach. Or make some sweet tea and lie down for a snooze. Get busy relaxing, no time left to lose. Don't say it, you cry. You're just spreading fear. This late August talk makes me cry in my beer. Don't worry. We'll always have pleasure in fall. But here, in late August, it's summer's last call. But it's still August. Chilled bottle of Italian Frascati, maybe a little Pinot Grigio or a crisp Sauvignon Blanc. Some cheese, Fontanella, Grana Padana, and some music from Lonnie Liston Smith, Quiet Moments. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show. Lonnie Liston Smith, Quiet Moments, and we're back on The Kevin Moore Show. Light Opera Works presents Rodgers and Hammerstein's South Pacific with a 30-piece orchestra through August 30th at Kahn Auditorium in Evanston. Based on James Michener's Pulitzer Prize-winning book, Tales of the South Pacific, Rodgers and Hammerstein's South Pacific is music by Richard Rodgers, lyrics by Oscar Hammerstein, and a book by Oscar Hammerstein and Joshua Logan. Set on a tropical island during World War II, the musical tells a sweeping romantic story of two couples, U.S. Navy nurse Nellie Forbush and French plantation owner Emile Debec, and Navy airman Joe Cable and the young local native girl Liat, and how their happiness is threatened by the realities of war and by their own prejudices. Considered by many the finest musical ever written, the score's songs include such classics as Some Enchanted Evening, I'm Gonna Wash That Man Right Out of My Hair, Younger Than Springtime, Bolly High, There Is Nothing Like a Dame, This Nearly Was Mine, and A Wonderful Guy. South Pacific is directed and choreographed by Light Opera Works Artistic Director Rudy Hogan-Miller and conducted by Music Director Roger Bingaman. The cast includes Larry Adams as Emile Debec, Sarah Lawson as Nellie Forbush, Yvonne Strumecki as Bloody Mary, Justin Adair as Lieutenant Joseph Cable, and Brian Zane as Luther Billis. South Pacific is Light Opera Works' second production of 2015. The season will continue with the concert productions Hollywood's Greatest Song Hits, October 2nd to the 11th, and Guys and Dolls, December 26th through January 3rd. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning stage performer who has been seen in such classics as Kiss Me, Kate, The Little Night Music, Brigadoon, and The Sound of Music. Larry's appeared at the Goodman Theater, Marriott, Drury Lane, and Chicago Shakespeare Theater, and has appeared in Broadway in The Phantom of the Opera. Honored by Chicago Magazine as one of Chicago's best and having enjoyed great success recently in La Cage aux Folles at the Marriott Lincolnshire. Proud graduate of the University of Wisconsin and now starring in the iconic role of Emile Debec in the Rodgers and Hammerstein musical classic South Pacific for Light Opera Works through August 30th at the Kahn Auditorium, 600 Emerson Street in Evanston, Mr. Larry Adams. Larry, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Well, you know, I'm excited to talk about one of my favorite musicals and certainly two guys who are probably second to none in the musical theater, Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Oh, absolutely. I love them.
You have to have been having a lot of fun of in this play, in this musical. And when you were preparing for this, Lair, did you look at some of the old the movie or anything done by Joss Logan when Rosanna Brazzi or Ezio Pinza was in this?
I have seen the movie years ago.
Sure.
And usually, I did the Music Man a few years back.
Right.
I try to stay away from watching the films of these iconic musicals, just because I just want to give the role my own sort of take and mm-hmm. not really. Be influenced too much by
sure.
By these performers. I mean, Robert Preston, you certainly can't duplicate what he did. So
sure.
It's best really just not to even watch him. Sort of do it the way you think it's right for you.
But you're having fun doing it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's thrilling. It's thrilling. It's whenever you're singing with a 30-piece orchestra. I mean, it's really the way these pieces were meant to be heard. And that is really, really exciting to do the show every night. And the set, the production values are really terrific. The concept of the set, really proud of the cast. The cast is terrific as well. Sarah is wonderful, and as is Justin and Brian and Yvonne. I mean, they're all... really, really terrific performers.
It's doing some research, of course, this was a great success and revival on Broadway in Lincoln Center,
mm-hmm.
and with Bartlett Sher, who put it on and produced it and so forth. And one of the comments he made, Larry, was that this is an example of the sensuality and energy of the theater. What the mind can conceive, the heart wills, and for one goal, to be civilized. And I think that's what you're doing, and I certainly congratulate you and the cast, because you bring such joy for people coming to the theater, because that's what the theater is all about, to stimulate and engage one's imagination, or to stimulate and engage one's intellect.
Certainly.
And that's what you're doing, and that's so much enjoyment. And this is a musical that spans generations. Children and parents and grandparents come and enjoy it, and there's timelessness to it.
Right. Well, certainly the subject matter is pretty apropos today as well. So, I mean, we still haven't gotten over a lot of the prejudices that we have in this country, and so that aspect of the show certainly rings true. I've always thought that this particular show, South Pacific, was incredibly atmospheric. I do remember seeing the movie, and I've seen the production, and there's just something about the ambiance of the show. When the orchestra plays the overture, it mm-hmm. throws you immediately into this world.
Right.
And, you just get a little swept away by what you were saying, what your mind can conceive. You can kind of throw you into this world by virtue of, the style of the music and the style of the show itself.
And isn't that the quality that Rodgers and Hammerstein brought to most of their musicals, whether it was Oklahoma or Carousel or State Fair or King and I or Flower Drum Song or Sound of Music? They did what others couldn't do. They wrote for the intelligence of the audience and for their entertainment.
Right. Well, my wife, she was in the company of Carousel at Lyric Opera, and again, it's another beautiful piece, and you're right about Rodgers and Hammerstein capturing the flavor of these period pieces, whatever time they're set in. They really have a knack for giving you the time that you're in.
Well, to your point, and it speaks to, some of the racial prejudices and biases and social biases that we experience even today. It's almost as if they felt that they had a social responsibility in their writing of their musicals.
Oh, sure, absolutely. Well, I mean, Sound of Music, which I've done a few times, is that way as well. I mean, they really, figuring that these pieces were written, many of them in the late 40s into the early 50s, you're just coming off the heels of World War II. So, the pieces themselves are very fresh in that regard, in what they were writing about.
Nobody better than you for our audiences or listeners who haven't experienced it. Give us a little background on the story.
Well, the story is set in the South Pacific, on an island, which I researched was Vanuatu Island, in the South Pacific. They're at a base there, not much is happening military-wise at the beginning point of the show. Nellie Forbush, she's an ensign, naval nurse, she has been seeing Emile Debeck, the character I play, and they become immediately attracted to each other. And the show starts out simply with them being at his plantation. He has a plantation. He's left France years and years ago because of a situation that he got himself into, and he basically left to the South Pacific to live in this island. He starts out right away, pretty much, the show starts out right away, pretty much with him very, very serious about Nellie. It's something that he is longing for, someone to be with. He has two Polynesian children with this woman who has passed away, and Nellie doesn't know this, of course, in the beginning, but it's just their story is one where, without giving too much of the show away, I mean, I think when people want to come see the show, they maybe a lot of people know the show, but
sure.
For those who don't, it involves Nellie's prejudice that she has to deal with, and the struggle that they have as a couple because of it. Cable is this handsome young lieutenant comes in. He has to go on a mission. They're going to he's been assigned to go onto this island to basically find out how Japanese troops are moving, and he is taken by Bloody Mary, who Yvonne plays.
One of the great songs of all time, Bali High,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, it's a fantastic song. And basically she tries to lure him because she is very smitten with him at the beginning. She thinks that he might be a good match for her daughter, Leon. So she tries to get him to Bali High, to which he goes. And Billets, Luther Billets, he wants to go there too for other reasons. There's a lot of drama in the relationships, and the backdrop being this mission that Captain Brackett and Commander Harbison want to get Emile Debeck to go on, because he knows these islands well. He's lived there for many years, mm-hmm. and he could possibly help Cable discover where the Japanese are moving. So that's the military aspect of it. Debeck refuses to go, and in the end, because of the falling apart of his relationship with Nellie, he decides to go. So I don't want to give too much more away as far as, you know, the drama that happens after that.
Sure.
But I think they've Rudy has particularly handled the military aspect of the show well, too, which I always think is a very difficult part of the show to convey to an audience. But I think he's done a great job with making the stakes be very, very high in that regard, in the greater picture. And within the greater picture are these two relationships that go on.
And then, of course, there's the music, which is second to none. Great music, like Younger Than Springtime, as I mentioned before. Some Enchanted Evening. What a beautiful song. To be able to sing that song, that's got to give you goosebumps to be able to do that.
Well, it's great. It's a real, real blessing, real thrill to do this music with a 30-piece orchestra. It's one of the reasons I've loved working at LOW in the past. And I've done quite a few musicals there, and the thing that keeps me coming back is to hear these scores as they were meant to be, you know, played and sung, you know. It just, that's the thrill. You don't have this kind of opportunity anymore, really, in bands around the city, unless you're going to Lyric Opera, or maybe some of the tours might have a fairly good-sized orchestra, and sometimes at, you know, our theaters, our musical theater houses around, we might get, you know, a good 11, 12, you know, maybe 13 pieces in the pit, but on a big show. But here, you know, you've got 30 pieces in the orchestra, and they're playing every note of that score the way it was meant to be. So there's something about that that's incredibly thrilling. And I think the audience is, when they even hear the overture
sure.
piece is just fantastic, and it immediately throws you into the world, and it gets you prepared for this story.
Do you most gravitate towards musical theater with all the great background you've had, whether it's in Sound of Music or Little Night Music or Brigadoon, Learning Lowe's Brigadoon,
right.
or Sound
of Music? That has been, I mean, I started in opera and.
Oh, really?
You know, and then moved back into musical theater.
Mm-hmm.
I should say I started in musical theater, moved to opera, and now I've gone, went back to musical theater. You know, it's really the thing I love most. And I've, in the past, have thought about wanting to do maybe more, you know, just what you call straight plays or whatever. But mm-hmm. for me, it's always been about the music. And that's really what has, you know, brought me to my career, you know. It's what I enjoy doing the most. And really, I have no need to go anywhere else as far as performing is concerned, as long as I can, you know, do that. I mean, it's really what I love to do the most.
Well, certainly a recognition to Rudy, who continually continually produces great shows and successful shows year in and year out because of the great ensemble cast that he has. Roger Bingaman doing such a wonderful job as musical director.
Oh, yeah, Bing is great.
You know, it's we're lucky to have a group like that and to be able to a resource here like that to
without
enjoy.
Without question, yeah, it's great. I mean, I really, this is an opportunity for people to see a musical theater piece as they were done, you know, when they were first written. So, you don't get that very often anymore, unless you're seeing a new musical where they now score new musicals for the amount of instruments that they think they're going to need.
Yeah.
You know, you'll get, but as far as the big warhorse musicals, you know, where they had 25, 30 in the pit,
right.
You know, you're not going to see it. They're going to be doing Guys and Dolls in the winter as the winter show, and I can guarantee you that you know, that score is going to jump off the page with it, you know, with the brass and what have you.
Sure.
So it's pretty exciting, and Rudy and Bing and everybody involved, Bridget, I mean, they've created a wonderful company. It's a great company to work with, you know, great attitude, and everybody is really usually on the same page and, you know, having a great time. So it's a pleasure to go to work.
What's next up for Larry Adams?
Well, I'm going down to Theater at the Center after we're done.
Oh.
I'm going to do production of Spamalot.
Oh, Bill Pulitzi.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great.
So that's going to be a 180-degree turn right there for me. So, but I'm really looking forward to a few laughs.
Yeah, he's celebrating an anniversary down there, I think. And,
I believe it's the 25th anniversary
down there
for Tatsy. So, yeah, it's another great place to work in town, and I love it down there as well. So it's exciting.
Well, it must be very entertaining house that you live in with your bride and yourself being so musically inclined and so forth.
Well, we're not a family that, you know, sits by the piano and, you know, sing show tunes. But, you know, I mean, we do love what we do. And, you know, we have a little guy, and I have an older son as well. So we have a good family time.
Well, we're lucky because we love what you do, too.
Well, thanks so much, Kevin. Appreciate it.
Light Opera Works is a resident professional not-for-profit theater in Evanston, founded in 1980. The company's mission is to produce and present musical theater from a variety of world traditions. All productions are presented in English, with foreign works done in carefully edited modern translations. Maximum scholarship is employed to preserve the original vocal and orchestral material as well as the spirit of the original text whenever possible. Audiences have come to know that at Light Opera Works they will experience repertoire often unavailable on the stages of commercial theaters and opera houses in modern productions with professional artists and full orchestra. Light Opera Works' mission is to produce musical theater from a variety of world traditions to engage the community through educational and outreach programs and to train artists in musical theater throughout the world. Light Opera Works presents Rodgers and Hammerstein South Pacific with a 30-piece orchestra through August 30th at Kahn Auditorium in Evanston. On the line with us right now is the award-winning performer Larry Adams, who portrays Emile Debeck in South Pacific. Larry, a delight chatting with you.
Well, thank you so much, Kevin. I really appreciate it. I hope people can come out and see the show. They're short runs, obviously, because it's a high overhead with a 30-piece Union Orchestra playing, so... You know, that's the trade-off. You do a shorter run, but you get the experience of, doing it the way you want to do it.
Well, if people would like tickets, the phone number is 847-920-5360. I'll wish you success out at the Theater at the Center with our good pal Bill Pulitzi and Spamalot, and let's talk soon.
All right. Thank you so much, Kevin, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Larry.
All right, bye.
Larry Adams, what a great performer, certainly in a great, great production of South Pacific at Light Opera Works. Again, for information, 847-920-5360. Based on James Michener's Pulitzer Prize-winning book, Tales of the South Pacific, Rodgers and Hammerstein, South Pacific has music by Richard Rodgers, lyrics by Oscar Hammerstein, and a book by Oscar Hammerstein and Joshua Logan. Interesting, Joshua Logan, of course, one of the great directors of musical theater and of movies, did such works as Annie Get Your Gun, and Camelot, Paint Your Wagon, Mr. Roberts, and Sayonara. In fact, Richard Rodgers was one of the only people next to Marvin Hamlisch who won an Oscar, an Emmy, a Tony, a Grammy, and a Pulitzer Prize. So it's a great production, certainly a great musical, one of the classics, a Pulitzer Prize-winning musical set on a tropical island during World War II. The musical tells a sweeping romantic story of two couples, U.S. Navy nurse Nellie Forbush from Arkansas and French plantation owner Emile Debeck and Navy Airman Joe Cable and a young local native girl, Liat, and how their happiness is threatened by the reality of the war and by their own prejudices. Considered by many the finest musical ever written. The score's songs include such classics as Some Enchanted Evening, I'm Gonna Wash That Man Right Out of My Hair, Younger Than Springtime, Bolly High, There Is Nothing Like a Dame, This Nearly Was Mine, and A Wonderful Guy. So, again, South Pacific, Light Opera Works. For information, 847-920-5360. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. I'd especially like to thank our guest, Mr. Bill Collins, a graduate of Fenwick High School, the creator and producer of Chicago's hottest new interactive theater experience, We Got a Bingo, now playing at the new Chicago Theater Works, 1113 West Belmont. For information, 312-391-0404. Go on and enjoy it. A great evening in the theater. Certainly something different on the lines of Tony and Tina's Wedding and Flanagan's Wake. You'll have a lot of fun. And Larry Adams, very talented performer in the iconic role of Emile Debeck in the Rodgers and Hammerstein musical classic South Pacific for Light Opera Works through August 30th at the Kahn Auditorium, 600 Emerson Street in Evanston. For information, 847-920-5360. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought every day at least to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a great day. I know the way I feel for you. It's now or never. The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. In your eyes I may not see forever. Forever. If we can be the best lovers, yet be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, then a luck then I suppose the music